People don't know what to do.
So the Sheikh had answered and saying it was too much for me. The achrayus, the responsibility of being a shochet, is just too much. You know that, you have to be very careful, the actual shechita, make sure everything is kosher and not treif. It's just too much responsibility. I decided that I've come to a stage where I don't want to have this responsibility. I decided to close down shechita and go into a business instead. So Chofetz Chaim said, very good. Now, before you start business, I have to tell you a few things which you need to know to start business. So he said, no, what do I need to know? You have to learn a few things before you start business. What type of things? So the Chofetz Chaim says, have you learnt the halachas concerning employment law? He said, no. So the Chofetz Chaim took out the Shulchan Aruch and he showed him, this is what you need to know before you start business. Okay, it seems a lot, but okay, well, maybe we can learn that before we can. So he said, have you learnt the halachas concerning selling and buying in kosher mishpat? So he's saying, no. So then he showed them the Shulchan Aruch where that is. And now he's getting a bit worried that it seems to be such a more achrayus, more responsibility. And the Chofetz Chaim went on and listed many more categories. Defected goods, guardianship laws of property. And he came to realize, that's what's the whole point of Chofetz Chaim, saying is that you know you have much more responsibility in opening up a business than is just being plain being a shochet. So the end of the story, what do we see from here is that some just being living a life in business is a great responsibility, and it's very important that we learn the halachas of kosher mishpat. So let's start. The rules of the shir is that everyone has to get involved. I mean, that's if I bring a case and discussion, we have to discuss it, see what you think, and we'll work for it. And the idea, halakha lemaisa, to get out of it is awareness of the issues involved. Obviously not to pass and shyness on cases similar, because in kosher mishpat one little change can make a whole difference in the case. But awareness of issues and being more responsible in your actions to the fellow man, that's what we're trying to be aware of this year. So let's start now with, we're going to discuss tonight a general topic of employees not living up to their commitments. Issues where employees do not live up to their commitments. Now the way we're going to handle these shaylos is as normal throughout the shirim we'll bring out real cases which were based in, we'll discuss them, and we'll come to an understanding of the halakhic issues in the general topic for it. So let us discuss and start with our first shaylos which came to Beis Din. The person came to Beis Din and he said like this.
This is an actual case.
All cases which I mentioned are actual cases. Either in the basin that I'm involved in, or other basins, the Sforim which brings down Shilas which they were in their basin. He came to basin and had a Shilas like this. I hired the builder to lay down cement in my garden. The work entailed two parts. That the cement had to be laid down in two separate parts. But very important is that the second part had to be done at the time when the first part was still wet. Lay down the cement the first time, and the second time has to be to lay down the cement while the first time was still wet. That was essential to the job. So the builder came, and he was going to charge me a few thousand shekels for the whole job, and he laid down the first part, and I was waiting for him to come back and lay down the second. And he didn't come. Waited a day, 2 days. I phoned him up and he said that a very important job came for him and he's not able to do the job. And he doesn't mind if he doesn't pay him even for the first part, you can go and find another worker instead of him. So I brought in a replacement worker, and by that time, unfortunately, it had already dried and meant that the whole job was useless. That would have been created. And not only more than that, And now I have to start again. I have to remove the first cement in order to do the whole job again. And now the cost of the job has gone up to 7,000 shekels. Because of the fact that now you have to involve removing the original cement. Now the question, I have a claim now on my original builder. Of course I don't have to pay him for the job he did. It's totally irrelevant what he did. But now my question is that I want to now claim from him the difference in the price that he's now caused me by putting down that cement. Has caused me additional price of 4,000 shekels. Am I entitled to that increase? Okay, that was his thing. Now, what would you think, your background knowledge, what would you feel would be how we'd approach this scenario? Would you think
the other guy's claim says,
I admit that the job I was supposed to come, and I admit that I didn't turn up, and it was useless now what I did, but the nicer, I told him to find another worker. Yes, it's now going to cost him more, but it's not my responsibility because it's only, it's only indirect damage which I've caused him. Something which is not my responsibility, according to halacha. Indirect damage. That was the first claim. Second claim that he tied it back is that the job that he's now charging 7,000 for, I would only charge 6,000. He's now not, I didn't cause him a loss of 4,000. If you're going to say caused him a loss, I really only caused him a loss of extra 3,000. Because this is a more expensive worker. He's got a more expensive worker than me. I would have only charged 6,000 for the job. So, firstly, I'm not responsible for the increase at all because it's indirect damage. And secondly, why should I pay 4,000 if I'm responsible? I should only pay 3,000 because that's the real price of the work which I would have charged for it, not 7,000.
Couldn't ask him to take the cement out.
The reason why it didn't come the first time is also the reason why it's not going to come now.
Did he know that the cement had to go down by a certain period at a certain point?
He knew that it was essential, yes.
And did he know?
He didn't know the period of time, though. No. He just knew.
He didn't know how.
He didn't know. He just knew it had to. Couldn't be dry before, otherwise it would be totally useless when it's dry.
But he didn't know when he put down the second layer that it was too late.
He didn't put down the second layer. He asked somebody to come in to do the job. And they came in and said, it's too late for me just to put down the second layer.
And the second layer never went down.
No, they were. It's too late for me. In order for me to do the job, I have to remove the original cement.
Right.
And start again afresh and do the whole thing as a fresh job.
Oh, and that would cost 7,000.
That would cost 7,000 to do it. Yep. And now we've got a situation in front of our eyes. Is this first layer of cement, which is useless, right, in front of our eyes. And now to do the original job, it will cost 7,000 shekels.
So, Pashtus, I would say that the guy that put down the first layer of cement would either come in and pull up the layer or pay someone else to do it.
Okay.
What?
That's what I said, you should come and do it.
Okay. So, we're going to see under how the halacha responds to this. Now, the first Maramokum is from a Gemara in Bamatzia.
I just have one general question. Is there a difference in the way they possibly call Shemishpah between Eretz Yisrael and Kiflaris?
Well, Mishem, we'll discuss it at later Shirin, but when we come to the general topic of dinner, the Malchus dinner, which means the law of the land, has relevance, not always, but it has relevance under certain issues. It has relevance to the actual halakha itself. We'll then discuss, according to the relative poskim, if there's a difference between Eretz Yisrael in this concept and outside Eretz Yisrael.
Right, so that's not what I'm referring to. I'm referring to, like, will they poskim like one sheet in Eretz Yisrael or a different sheet in the book?
It doesn't happen often, but you'll see through the shirim ever so often, Rav Moshe Feinstein will cover. You'll see Rav Moshe Feinstein does come up with kiddushim which are not like the poskim in the Eretz Yisrael.
Okay.
and then we'll discuss what to do in those issues. Now, the first Ma'amokah, the Shulchan Aruch says, which is based on the Gemara Bava Masir, Tav Ayin Hey on the face, it's a Mishnah over there, and he says like this: if a worker backs out, and it's a Dovah Ha'ovitz, it's something by him backing out, I'm going to lose by it. My worker's going to back out, I'm going to lose. Could go, for example, Pishtim La'alos Mina Mishra. I hired the worker to put flats, to soak the flats in certain chemicals. And he puts it in, and he has not removed it. And if it stays there, it'll be totally ruined. So if he backed out of the job at this stage, I've lost my pishtim. Echod po, echod kabbim. Doesn't matter what type of worker he is, a day laborer or general worker. Ein yochul lasavo. The worker is not allowed to back out of the job. He's not allowed to back out of the job. By backing out of the job is causing a loss. He's not allowed to do that. Vinlo nantu. As long as it, he hasn't got, if he's got a very good excuse, then he's got a very good excuse. But if he's got no excuse, then he's not allowed to back out. Because if he's got an onus, let's say he's in the hospital, he can't do the job.
And he's now responsible for the paper.
Then he's not responsible. See, the onus, right? Shemayim calls that he's not able to do the job at that stage. Yes, and the pishtim gets ruined. What can you do? It's not his responsibility. Onus rachmona potre, as you often say.
You could have
brought someone up and told them. If it costs the same amount of money, fine, but if you want me to pay extra money to hire somebody in my place, I'm not responsible if onus happens. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu has decided that in the, because it's an onus, that you take the responsibility. Yes? And the Chozobo, he wasn't allowed to back out, and he did back out. If you could have found original workers to do the job when he took on the job, you hired him and you had a choice of workers. You hired him. But now you can't find them without charge paying much more. Then the din is socha aleihem umatzim. You have the right to socha aleihem umatzim. That's the two options you have. What does socha aleihem umatzim mean? Socha aleihem means is that I hired you to do the job for 3,000. I can now hire a replacement worker for 6,000. Which means that you, the worker, has to pay 3,000 out of your own pocket for the replacement worker.
Am I mechuyev to shop around?
I'm mechuyev to shop around as much it doesn't cause me a loss. Yes? A reasonable shop. Let's say I've got 2 days to play with. I should shop around a bit to see what's the best available rate. And then go for it. And then the worker, the first worker who backed out, he is responsible to pay. He has the responsibility to pay out of those wages for that new worker. Yeah. But, meaning, let's be clarified here. If the new worker will cost 8,000, the original worker will cost 3,000, and the new worker costs 8,000, what we would do, we say, okay, you hired a new worker. Now it's cost you an extra 5,000. Out of that 5,000 which it cost you, you can get 3,000 from the original worker. Yeah, 3,000 you never gave him, yes?
The 3,000 you would have given him.
3,000 you would have given him. And now 3,000 from the original worker out of his pockets. Yeah? But 2,000 you have to suffer yourself. Meaning we're limiting the responsibility of the first worker up until his wage.
Oh.
You hired him for 3,000. He backs out on a job which is going to, and now it's going to cost you 8,000 to do that job. You can charge the original worker 3,000 from his pocket. So now together you've got 6,000, but you have to now suffer the loss of 2,000 yourself. So everyone understands?
Why is that?
Ah, so the question is, why is that? Yeah. So let's recap on the case. nice to meet you. Now the case is that besides a worker to lay down cement, and he was going to charge 3,000 for the job, he came and laid down in one part. He's supposed to do it in two parts. He laid out one part, and if he backed out now, the whole job would be useless. And he did back out, and now the whole job now costs me 7,000 to do. So he's caused me a loss of 4,000. Can I charge him that loss? That was the discussion. So he said, a worker from the Mishnah that backs out is responsible to find a replacement worker up to the amount of his own wages. So, in our case, our scenario, he has to pay 3,000 out of his own pocket to find a replacement worker. Now the question which has just been asked, why is it only 3,000? He's caused me a loss of 4,000. He lost me 4,000. Why is he only responsible for 3,000? So the Chazanish explains like this, which is the next Marmok. He says, "Post akacha da'as hani poskim de'ein kam mishum gami." By the worker backing out, he's not causing you a direct loss. Darov mitzim pola biyoka. Because most of the times, you'll find a replacement worker. Sometimes you won't. But most times you would find a replacement worker. And therefore, when he backed out, it wasn't malicious that he was definitely going to cause you a loss. It wasn't definitely going to cause you a loss. Therefore, what we have over here, he says, below nichnas apol elakavet starpolim biyoka below behesed. He says that what we're building over here is that me backing out is only causing you what we call in halacha grama. I'm causing you indirect damage, because now you have to pay extra to do the job. That's indirect damage. So why do you have to pay at all? So he says, this is what happens with every agreement which you have with a worker. When I hire a worker, and I say to him, I want you to do the job for 3,000. I'm committing myself to pay you 3,000 if you do the job. What are you committing yourself to do? You, the worker, what is your commitment? No commitments. You also have to commit. If I'm willing to commit myself to pay 3,000 for the job, you also have to commit something. What do you commit yourself?
Commit the work.
You commit to do the work, or to pay a replacement worker to do the work up until the amount of money you would have paid me. Either I'll do the work and then you'll pay me 3,000, or I will do the work using somebody else and I'll pay him 3,000 to do the work. And therefore it's a dual commitment. You do the work, I'll pay you 3,000. If you don't, then you have to find a worker who's going to do it, and you have to commit yourself to pay 3,000 if it's necessary for that replacement job.
Why are we implying that condition that I never said?
Because that's how the Chazal, the Torah, covers that you have to have a joint commitment.
This is
Tekonis Chazal, according to a lot of poskim, it's a Tekonis Chazal.
Okay, so if that is the case, would Minag HaMedina have any effect on that? Let me ask you specifically what I'm talking about.
Yes.
For example, I'm a CPA. When someone engages me to do a tax return, it's pretty much understood between the two of us that if he agrees to pay me $1,000 for a tax return, and I'm agreeing that if I mess up with the tax return, I'm going to pay $1 million that he's getting penalized.
So we'll get that if you have time at the end of this year, or we'll get to this point at the beginning of next year. Okay?
Okay.
But according to natural, what does the Torah say every agreement to a worker means I commit myself to pay you 3,000 when you do the job. If you don't do the job, then there needs to be a replacement worker, and then you have to also take 3,000 out of your pocket if it's necessary to help do the job. So therefore you're only limited to 3,000.
I'm really paying 6,000.
I'm going to pay 3,000, but like I was always doing the job.
I'm going to be out my 3,000.
Means the brother boss is going to be 3,000. I'm 3,000 because that's for the job. You if it costs more than 3,000, have to chip in. How much do you have to chip in? Also up to 3,000. Just like I would pay 3,000 for the job, you also have to pay 3,000 for the job if it's necessary. For example.
So in our case, I'd be responsible for 5,000?
So, if, for example, in our case, the original job was 3,000. Now it costs 7,000 for me to do the job. So therefore, you've got 4,000 difference. I'm going to pay 3,000 because that's what I was always going to pay for the original job.
Who's I?
Me, the fellow boss. The one who hired the worker. The employer. He's going to pay 3,000. That's what he committed always. Now, who's going to pay the difference of 4,000? You, the worker, have to pay also up to 3,000 to do the job. And now, the other 1,000, the worker's not responsible and because it's called indirect damage, and the original person, the owner, has to now pay that extra 1,000 himself. So at the end of the day, the figures are going to be 4,000 for the balabos and 3,000 for the worker from his pocket.
So the balabos pocket suffers the entire loss.
He loses 1,000. He loses 1,000 shekels.
4,000.
How much did he pay?
He was going to pay anyway 4,000.
He was going to pay 3,000 in any case. So at the end of the day, he's now has to, because you backed out, he has to pay an extra 1,000, not extra 4,000. And the worker now has to take 3,000 out of his pockets and pay.
The worker has to reimburse him. No, so he's not 4,000. The Bala bus pays 7,000 shekels to the worker.
To the second
then
worker.
The first worker reimburses him 3.
First worker never received his money.
Right. So the first worker now pays him 3.
Pays him 3, yes.
So
how much does the Balabas actually ever paid for this job? How much money came out? 4,000.
Okay.
That's it, he paid 4,000.
Okay.
So at the end of the day, he lost 1,000. Yeah. So then, what do we learn from here? Because it's indirect damage, you can't really charge him at all for it, but because he's your hired worker, his wage, he's committed to pay from his own pocket.
Can't the worker one claim, you qualify, you finish the job, and cost is 7, you would have, let's say that worker could have bought it down to 6.
Ah, exactly. So now we'll go back to the second time, his second time off, the worker was that, he said, why is it costing you 7,000? Should it cost you 6,000? He's charging you 1,000 because he's an expensive worker.
But it doesn't matter in the end anyway.
Ah, so what we're saying, it doesn't really matter. Yeah? Okay, so let's say 6,000.
Let's say he would have said he could have done for 5,000.
So you still have to pay 3,000.
Right.
Yeah?
If we would have said 5, then we had something to talk about.
If he would have said 5.
I would have done for 5.
Ah, so then it would have been something. If let's say we had the scenario, said I would have done this job for 5, he's charging you an extra 2,000, and really I only caused you a loss of 2,000, because really this job will cost 5,000 now, it doesn't really cost 7,000.
What is the difference what you were trying to do? I don't want to use you anymore, you backed out on me.
Okay, I can find you something for 5,000.
What's the going price for it, let's say?
Let's go, there's something over there for 5,000.
So that was the question that you have to shop around.
So you have to shop around. So let's change the scenario a bit. So we don't get too complicated. Let's change it. So when I originally offered you the job for 3,000, I was doing it 1,000 beneath the going rates. And that's why you took me on. Really, the rate was 4,000. Yes? So therefore, well, how much loss did I cause you? I didn't cause you 3,000. 4,000, yeah? I really only cost you 3,000. Because if you didn't have me, it would have cost you 4,000 in any case. So again, we have to make those type of issues really to see whether he gave you a special deal, and therefore we have to work out the loss. What loss you caused him. The worker is responsible for the loss, up to his wage. That's the rule. Now we have to work out what the loss is. You can work out the loss only based on what worker he could have got originally in replacements, and now how much he has to pay that's going around. That's how we have to work. Okay.
Let me ask you a question on the case of the Shulchan Aruch.
Yes.
If the worker was the one that put the fish done in the mishnah, would that make a difference? Because then it's no longer grum.
He put the work. The case is talking about that. He puts it in the. He hired the work to put the fish on the mishnah and to take it out.
and why is that a grammar?
Because that
he did it be a dime.
He did be a dime because that was part at the time. It was damaging it at the time. Or was that part of what he was supposed to do?
He was
supposed to do it.
No, but he was supposed to put it in and take it out.
Yes.
The mice, he damaged.
So we don't. At the time he puts it in, it was completely with the agreements of the owner and what he was supposed to do. So when was he damaging? The fact that he didn't finish it off. At that stage, at that moment, when he doesn't turn up, that's when he's damaging the lack of doing something.
Let me ask you a more condensed case. Let's say I have a dental office, okay, and I have something that I need cleaned. I don't know if this is true, I'm just making it up. And the way you do that is you immerse the item in acid for 60 seconds. In 61 seconds, it will dissolve. So I stand there for 61 seconds. Is that still not a grammar?
No, that would be considered mazik. And why is the difference?
Yeah.
Because over here, when I back out, is it for sure that the pishdon is going to be lost?
Oh, is it? It's not.
If I find a replacement worker to do it, it won't. And that's what the Chazanish pointed out, is that when I backed out, it's not definitely causing damage at that stage. Because you could get a replacement weapon.
Let's say I backed out, but I didn't tell you until it was too late.
Then it will be a problem. That would be different altogether.
Okay.
If I backed out, and you were at that stage in theory, you could have found a replacement weapon to prevent any damage. And you couldn't, so therefore it's not direct damage for me. Now, that's what we learned from the first case. Now let's go on to the second case and see, similar but different. First case, the Beis Din said like this. I received a letter in the mail which stated that I needed to renew my insurance for my house. And if I do not renew it in this amount of time, the next 30 days, it will automatically be nullified, the insurance for my house. So I phoned up the agent dealing with my insurance for my house to organize the continuation of house insurance. I gave him my details and he said, it will be done, don't worry. A few months later, unfortunately, there was a fire in my house. Baruch Hashem, no one was physically hurt, but I had considerable collateral damage to my property. And now I went to a claim against the insurance company. The insurance company said, you're not covered because you never renewed your insurance. I then phoned up the agents. And he told me, yes, he has my details down, but he forgot to process the details, and therefore I was not covered by insurance. I am now making a claim against the agent that he caused me not to have insurance, and I want him to pay for all the damage which the fire took place in my house. That's his claim. The agent says, yes, what can I say? I forgot, I took down the details, but it's not my fault, I forgot. Things happen like this. Do these things happen? So what do you think?
Well, I don't think it's so clear that the insurance company is on the road. Because under the laws of agency, once you give it to the agent, it's like it's muscle for the insurance company. So let's try a little with that.
Okay.
Okay, let's assume that's not the case. So no, that's my profession. When I agree to that, that's why I carry my practice insurance.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Exactly why it's there.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else has a view?
My turn, yeah.
Okay, now we've got a different turn. Very good.
When your agent is supposed to be doing this duty, and then maybe you get something in the mail from the insurance company, the person who is doing it. So there's still a health
to make sure that things have been done. That's what you're saying. Okay.
Well, actually, it takes 30 days before you get the mail.
So, 90 days in the case of my empty money.
Okay. See, well, I don't think that... I would have to disagree there because the reason you have an agent is because you rely on the agent. I have to be on a tax return 90% of the time, they're not looking at the paper.
But the other reason why they do not, because I think that a person with a professional has a greater degree of responsibility.
Ah, very good.
However, I'm questioning.
We'll see the basis of that at the later.
So, a mechanic has the responsibility to help the person on the side of the road, has a greater degree of responsibility than me, who knows nothing about cars. He does more damage than I do, the mechanic is actually more high than I am. But in this case, what the agent is doing, I'm not sure I see what the professional is. He gets to send something on the computer, or he's going to put something in the mail. I'm not sure if he's doing anything professional.
Okay.
Maybe he is.
Okay. So let's see what the let's start. So there's a tesefta, which the Shulchan Aruch brings down in Siman Kuf Pei Gimel, and he says like this: Hanosin Mas L'Shulchan. I give my money to my agent. What do I want him to do? I want him Liknos Lo Schora Yudua. I want him to go to a famous marketplace and buy no good, cheap products. I want to make business with this goods which I want him to buy for me. What happens? Lo locha. He didn't go. Now it's too late. I gave him money and he didn't do it. I lost now the potential profits. The halacha is Eila alav ella taromus. My claim against that agent is that I have what we call halachic taromus. I have halachic complaints against you. It's not nothing. But can I get money from you for you causing me to lose potential profits that I can't? But I have halachic complaints. You should know that you did something, as far as the Kodesh has done, is something which is not the Seder. And if you really want to get the clean bill of health before Yom Kippur, then you should really embarrass me in order to not me have taromus or compensate me to feel better for you. But can I force you to pay for that loss?
Does it make a difference if they pay shaliach or he doesn't?
No, it makes no difference. No difference. So here we see, I asked somebody to do something that was going to potentially bring me money. He doesn't do that. And I lost that potential, but I can't take that out of the agent. Is it comparable to what we're discussing over here?
No. That's talking about a profit. This is talking about to protect from the loss.
Ah. So, is insurance a profit or protection from a loss?
Yeah, but it's two independent things that happen. First, my house burned down. Then I'm asking you to pay me for it.
Okay. So, the Divrei Markio says like...
Who is the
Divrei Markio? He was one of the Gedoli Acharonim from the early 19th century. And he says like this. He was asked a very similar question. And he says like this. Zahalo Gorilom Shum Hezikra Mania Tareva. This agent who didn't do the insurance, he didn't cause any loss, damage, he just prevented profit. Ki Asrefa Lunasta Al Yodo. Because he didn't burn down the house. He didn't burn the house. Rat Shagomlo Manias Malakas Tashlumin Beda Hesit Asrefa. All he did is prevent you getting compensation because of that loss. That's what we call in Chazal, Harimabato Kiso Shachavero. I've taken your money and prevented it from getting any profit. And the halacha in such a case, it's not the right thing to do, but it's potter, we can't make you responsible. The Hatzma Hesedim. So that's the first thing he says. Insurance is not getting insurance. It's not causing you a loss. He's preventing you getting a benefit.
So, now this would apply already by this time in history. Minadam Dina doesn't have an effect on this. The fact that we both understand that if I mess up, it's my responsibility.
We're going to the next Shaila. We're going to discuss where this Minag Medina is applicable, which you're talking about.
Okay.
Let's say you go to a car wash, right? In America, they have a car wash, and they put on an extra layer of wax. You pay money for an extra layer of wax, right?
Yeah.
But it turns out they never did that. You thought they did. And then after a couple months, you see the rust is starting in your car. That is similar. That's also not a... It's just supposed to be preventing damage.
Yes.
Normal things that can happen.
Mm-hmm.
But they just never did it.
Yes.
They charge you for it.
But of course, they have to reimburse what they charge, because they can't pay. You can't.
Yeah, you need
but to charge them for the damage or the protection from the damage, that you can't charge. They can't get paid for a job which they didn't do. So any money which you paid them for the job, which and they didn't do the job, obviously they have to return. But for the damage or the payment for the damage that you cause, you can't charge them in such a scenario. Now, the second point he points out.
In that particular case,
mm-hmm.
Why would I be called a shomer chatzar?
On what?
On the car.
I gave it back to you.
No, but I was given a shmirah by coding it.
Shomer has certain halachas when we discuss it in detail, that whole section of Shulchan Aruch. In order to be a shomer, you have to have very precise contracts made up in order to make you a shomer and responsible for items. It doesn't fall into those categories over here in such a case. And responsible to do the job, not to look after your car. Now, the second thing he points out over here is the Rebakir. He says, whose agent is he? In our case, the insurance. Is he my agent? Meaning, me who's got the house which unfortunately is burnt down. Did I hire him to do the job? And he just didn't do it. And I've got a claim against him that he prevented me getting this benefit, but I can't get the money out from him because at the end of the day he just didn't get me a benefit, he didn't actually cause me a loss. Or he's an agent of the company. Whose agent is he? So he says clearly, Nidan Adon Shein Shliach Shalo, he's not even your agent. Rat Shliach Shochevra. He's the agent of the company which provides insurance.
Good, so if you accepted it and he's their agent, so then he should have insurance.
And therefore you cannot obligate him.
The insurance company should be able to.
Now, you can't obligate him because he's not your worker. We're discussing after you hired the worker, he just didn't do a job, but can you respond to them? You say, even if he is your worker, you can't. He's saying here that it's not even your worker, he's the worker of the chevra. Now, is the insurance company responsible? That's your law. And what the minhag, there we look at the minhag and the responsibilities of how the agent has with the insurance company. And it's not a clear-cut minhag in this case. There's no clear-cut minhag in this case. Because if an agent, the way it works over here, if an agent does something which is totally irresponsible, then it's his personal responsibility. You can't make the responsibility of the chevra in such a case.
In this case, would Dina de Marcusa determine Minag of Medina?
We go after Minag for sure. Where do we go after Dina Marcus of Dina? Will be a whole different shit. Dinner Bakus Dinner is not a minhag. When is it turning into minhag? Minhag is that, let's say, for example, a law was introduced and then it was actually practiced by everyone in the business over a good amount of time, and therefore it came established business practice, not just a law of the country. Then it changes into a minhag. There was no clear minhag that was investigated, and there was no clear minhag that was established in such a scenario. And therefore, in this case, we couldn't make responsible the agent for the lack of him doing the job in such a case.
This case happened in the United States as well?
This case, yes. Yes. Now let's tackle, which is going to now our last case tonight. And we're going to tackle on those issues which you were discussing beginning. So it came to based on a shaila like this. I received from the British tax authorities reimbursement of tax in the form of a check which has 6 months to deposit. The laws of the British tax authorities are that if you do not deposit the check within 6 months, you've lost that reimbursement and you can never get the money back from the tax authorities. I gave that check over to my employee to handle and deposit in the right account for me. After a considerable amount of time had passed, more than 6 months, I remembered about this check. Me, the person who owns the check. And I checked, and I saw that it hadn't been deposited in any of my accounts. So I went to question my employee, and he said that, oh, I forgot to deposit the check. I now have a friendly shaila against my employee. Not something personal. We got a halachic discussion. Is he responsible for the loss, for me, for that loss, which I now can't regain from the tax authorities or not? Does he have to pay the money which is written on the check into my bank account for the fact that he did not deposit the check into my account in the appropriate time limit?
Here because of Minhag HaMedina, I think it would make a big difference if he's an employee or if he is an independent contractor. An employee, I seldom expect to take responsibility for his actions. If I give something to my CPA, I always expect him to take responsibility.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll define who you gave it to. That is the general. We'll get to that point in a minute. But let's say we gave it to your employee, somebody you don't expect to take responsibility. Now, would you say he's responsible in this case? From what you've heard at the beginning of this year so far, all that you've learnt up to now, do you think he's responsible to now to pay back that check which he did not deposit?
Well, actually,
asked him to do a job. He didn't do the job. Why didn't he do the job? He forgot. Is he responsible for the loss which I caused by that not getting that check in my account?
Not so sure it's the loss, because they also be near forever. Because I don't have anything until I actually deposit the check and the money is transferred.
Now, is a check something which you have or something which you potentially have?
Depends. If it's negotiable, then it's something I have. If I can't do anything with it but deposit it, which is, I assume, the case with the taxing authority, then it shouldn't be. It's just IOU, basically.
Okay, so we're going to discuss it in the Shulchan Aruch. What is this? So the Shulchan Aruch brings down from the Tshuvas HaRashba a halacha. Number 5. Sofer Shekosev Shtar hired somebody to write a document, a loan document, because of Mona Pamukim Mitzrayim. And in the loan document, the person who was responsible to write it, he wrote the wrong amount. Instead of writing $200 that this person owes me, he wrote he only owes me $100. Oh, a mazik lachaveh beitish yeso, or a case where I damaged somebody by giving him bad advice. Kulam peturim. The one who wrote the document is not liable. Lo havi ela grama. My action only is called indirect damage. By me writing the wrong amount in the document, $100 that you owe me instead of $200, by you cause now I cause you a loss of $100, that's called indirect damage. So here we see, in that scenario, that preventing you getting money, it's like a check, I even write the wrong amount in the check, and now because I wrote the wrong amount in the check, you lost $100. That's called indirect damage, because it's not something which you physically had in your hand at the time, it's something which you could have had and I prevented you having. So here also, in our case, you could have had this $600, pounds, whatever you want to say, on the check. It was written on the check. You could have had it. Have you got it now? No. You could have got it if it would have been deposited. I did deposit it. I prevented you getting a potential profit. That is called grama. That's what you would think to compare the two.
Let me ask you a question. Let's say I have an insurance company and I insure this check, and the check and the check goes bad. Do I have to make good on it?
If you insure, that's the service, yes.
Yes. Why? The grumble.
Because the agreement, it's agreements which is, it's not
because I agreed to cover it.
You agreed to cover it, not damage. You agreed to, I pay you money and you're going to pay for a service. What's your service? That if the check gets damaged any type of way, whether it's by accident or purpose or not, you're going to reimburse it. So therefore, it's like an agreement.
Okay.
Special agreement.
Fine, fine.
Special agreement.
So, I don't know when this model is from Mara, but let's say today, let's say, not a sofer, a lawyer.
Yes.
So there's an implied agreement that if you mess up, you're going to make good on it.
So we're getting back to your point.
Yes.
When do we take on your minhag? Yeah, according to Shulchan Aruch, there's no such thing. You're saying there's a minhag nowadays that you take on responsibility.
Minhag is just understood between us.
Minhag that you take on all responsibility because that's what they do. Okay, we'll get to that. But what the Shulchan Aruch is saying is that preventing you getting a potential money is always called grama, like we said in previous cases. Now, what? How does this fit with number six? You have to now tell me how this is fixed with number six. Number six seems to say the opposite. Chosev b'tshuvas masis binyomit. Shach brings down this tshuva. Hichzira lelova shtar she'ena perua. Havi kamo serv shtar b'chayev. If I give back a loan document to the borrower before he pays, and now he's not going to pay because there's nothing over him that's going to force him to pay, then me who gave it back is chayv to pay for that loss which I have incurred by giving it back. You had the loan document. You gave it back to the borrower before he paid. Now the borrower's not going to pay. I gave it back. I now have to compensate you for that loss. Why? That is also really indirect damage. It's a document. It's potential money. It's only potential money. I'm preventing you getting potential money.
No, because that money is if I'm entitled to it, it's my money.
The money is still yours.
But now I'm not going to be able to get it.
That's what
it's not a profit. It's something that's mine that I now is not going to be mine.
No,
the tax authorities is not mine yet. I didn't get the money.
Why? What's the difference? What's the difference?
You owe it to me.
You got a document here. It says you owe me money.
Because I don't.
I've got a document that says you owe me money. Yes?
Correct.
Yes. So therefore, that money is in your hands, not my hands. I've got potential getting that money. Yes.
But no, you have.
And I now, the, now I took that potential away.
The star that you have, you could sell it and get money for it.
It can't be sold.
So it can't be sold.
Can't be sold.
All right. So it can't be sold. I gave up money already. So if I don't get back the money, it's a loss. It's not Mania forever.
I know. At the time I gave the money, it's now your money. Now this document is a potential. The documents. Now we're looking at the documents because I didn't touch that money. I'm looking at the document. This document is a potential for money. That document. And I go and give that document over to you that takes that potential away. That's also indirect damage. I'm taking a potential. I wasn't involved in the original money which you gave. You gave that money, fine. Now, you're asking me to write up a document which gives you a potential to get money.
The difference is that one is active. The other one is grumma. He didn't pay in. By the check, he just failed to deposit. So that's a grumma. But by actually giving away, he gave away the other document, right?
Yes, he gave it away back to the borrower. Okay, so we'll see from the source and the answers like this. Says number 7. Mishum de sov star kvar hoylo star. Sov star is when you already have a document in your hand. Vizeh sorfo. You've got a document in your hands and you burn it, then I'm responsible for burning it. The document is considered money. By making the document useless, I am now destroying your money. Potential money in a document is already considered money, as if the money is in the document. And now I burn that document, I'm burning money, and therefore I'm responsible. Masha ain't came, but so far, but in the case where the scribe didn't write the right amount in the document, I die in no hoyus, because you never had the document. I'm creating that document. I created it in a bad way. You never had a document for me to destroy. I just never gave you the correct document. That's called indirect damage. So what the Ksos is saying is the document is money. And if you destroy that document in any form or manner, you're destroying money and you're responsible. But in the other case, you never had a document. I just wrote the wrong documents. I prevented you getting a document. I prevented you getting money, then that's called wrong money. So we see from there that all checks and all documents and all checks are considered money. We see from there all checks, a document which can give you potential money is already as if the money is in your pocket already. And if you damage that document in any form or manner, then it's not called grammar. That's called, you've mazik it. It's called garmit. You've damaged his property and you have to compensate it. You've lost the check down the toilet, you have to pay for that. Now!
But if you didn't,
Okay, go ahead.
Yes?
But that's not the same thing, not the positive.
You're reading more into the Kutzos than he's saying. He doesn't mention the word potential money. He just says you have the shtar.
What is a shtar?
No, it's not potential money. It's money. The money is not potential. It's there. He has a chiv to me.
No, I'm not destroying the chiv.
You are.
No, I'm not. If you go to a basin and the borrower admits that I borrowed money, but the document doesn't exist anymore, the borrower still has to pay.
Correct.
So I haven't destroyed money.
My ability to collect it.
Ability to collect. Who says ability? So ability to collect money. The document is ability to collect money.
But to collect money, then it's already.
No, it's not mine. Not mine. It's ability to collect money. That's what the document is. And I destroyed ability to collect money. Then that's called I've muzzik your money. Now you pointed out you did a passive act here. Yeah? You didn't actually burn it, and you didn't give it to the borrower. You just didn't deposit it. Passive act. So what do you mean you did a passive act? You did a physical act. You took the check. You took the check. And you put it in the drawer. So you went physically and gave it to a place where it made it useless. If you leave the check in the drawer, it's a useless check.
It's useless in my pocket too.
It's useless in the pocket. So therefore, it's a positive act of destroying the check. You're putting it in some place. That's a different claim. Okay, I've destroyed the check. I destroyed the check.
Yeah.
But I destroyed it. It's all my fault because I forgot.
I didn't destroy it. The clock destroyed it.
I destroyed it.
Why?
I'm putting it in the place.
I didn't put it anywhere. I just took it and I got it in my
took hand. Took it, and I did deposit it in the right place. I put it in the chair.
No, I didn't put it anywhere.
Drawer.
I kept it in my hand for 6 months.
Yeah?
I kept it in my hand for 6 months. I didn't put it anywhere. So, I didn't do anything.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know that it's a distinction that makes a difference, but I see a difference.
Yeah, in your pocket.
You did a positive act of not doing something. Okay, but now we've got to come to your last thing, and this is where we're finished because we're running out of time. Is that forget? It's forgetting a claim or not. So we see Orachaim that says a halach and Orachaim. If you on purpose don't daven mincha, can you daven two maris or not? Halacha is, if you on purpose don't daven mincha, you can't daven too much. If you, but the onus, not your fault, you didn't daven mincha, you can daven too much. We won't read it inside because we're running out of time. But the halacha is, if you forget to daven mincha, you can also daven too much. So we see from there, forgetting is onus. It's not your fault. On the other hand, we see, when you're in the Hilchos Shomrim, if you forget where you put the object, I put it somewhere, I don't know where it is, that's considered you're negligent and you have to pay. So the basic line is, forgetfulness is considered negligence if you are a Shomer of the article. If your responsibility is to look after the article, then forgetfulness is considered negligence. But if you're not somebody who has to look after the article, then forgetfulness is not negligence in such a case. So, in our case, forgetfulness. Is he a shomer or not a shomer on his check?
Oh,
he's
a shomer.
He's a shomer on the check. He's a shomer on the check. He's a shomer on the check. So, for no, it doesn't matter what it is. Even if you're not getting paid, you're obligated for negligence. And we're saying forgetfulness is negligence if you have a responsibility to look after the article. And since you have a responsibility to look after the check, then you can't claim I'm an onus because I forgot.
It's different than the insurance
because firstly, there was no article to look after. That's not. I looked after very well. I still got the details.
No, you
still got the details. I didn't damage your details. Your details are still here.
No, but he put them in his drawer.
Okay, but yeah. Okay, so I didn't damage.